Accession number 18456, Reel 2.
George Ponsford, Reel 2.
Here we've got the army, some of the Koreans have, guerrillas have been shot, and this officer said to me, "Corporal Ponsford, isn't it frightful?" I thought, "Oh my, you just don't think of those things. You, every man for himself. If you don't kill them, they're going to kill you, and that's it. No messing about. They would shoot you." Anyway, we progressed on from there. We came back, and I can't remember everything, every move. We came out for Christmas. I mean, all these bottles of beer, because you weren't allowed anything. You weren't allowed no whiskey that was offered as material. And I go with me and this corporal, I tell him, "Johnson, he's a bit half drunk. Any beer there?" I said, "No, it's all empty. We went ours." And he went all through his bottles and he found one. Glug, 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 glug. He never gave us time to tell him it was paraffin. The next minute, spurted all out and he chased me all over the place. Yeah, a bottle of paraffin was put on the fire. Keep the fire going.
That was at Christmas.
Sometime around that area, yeah. And then we went up to, took up positions. We were in a horseshoe. I can't remember the names of the place. The Ulster Rifles was on the left. I think it was the Fusiliers on the right, and the Gloucesters was in the, it was like an horseshoe. We were down the bottom. And then they started coming in. Didn't know it was North Koreans or what, because our flanks were bare. They pulled out without letting anybody know. I don't know if it was Americans or South Koreans. And they said, "There's reinforcements coming up." The reinforcements come up and they happen to be South Koreans. And what they do in our positions. Went round, broke all the wood up and put it on. They all lit bonfires. That was at night time when the attack was coming in. I thought, "Christ, and old Joe can't pull this out." He wouldn't have stood a chance. The discipline was, well, these people were only peasants. They were taken off the land, forced into the army, or he had to get into the army. And their training was diabolical, you imagine. Because one thing you don't do, you don't even light a cigarette. And I woke my section up, and I woke a bloke up called Tudor, Frank Tudor. I'm still trying to contact him. I said, "Get up, stand to. Is it payday?" he said. "You got bullets going all over the bloody place." You know, this sense of humour, is it payday? Then we pulled out and we went back to a place called Suwon. I think the Chinese took Seoul or something like that. And there was a place called Pyeongtaek, just outside by the Han River. I think we was there for about 57 days. There was no planes, it was so cold, even the tanks were froze, you know, the guns, and you have a cup of tea and you put it down, you got frost all around your mouth. Then, all of a sudden, a couple of fighters come out of the sky, about half a mile out in front of us, and you could hear them, wasn't it? A couple of days after that, the Turks went through us, the Turkish army. They went through us, and 3 or 4 days after they pushed through, we had to go up on this hill to have a look. It was massacre. We had never seen nothing like it in my life. I saw one Chinaman with his top of his head off, he looked straight down in his throat. Another one, he had his head hit with a rifle butt, straight down the middle, and it's like a V shape in his head. Another one with a bayonet in him. Quite a number with a bullet hole in the back of the ear. So it was obvious they didn't take prisoners.
This is the Turkish troops.
The Turks. Yeah. But there it is. This is war, and man's inhumanity to man is unbelievable.
Were the Turks friendly towards the British?
Yeah. They're very, very nice people. Can I put it this way? It's not people what caused you the war. It's politicians. Politicians start the war and they send the young men out to do the killing. Am I right or wrong?
Yes.
You know, but, and I look at them and I thought, I see all these dead now. I thought, of course, they must have a family back home, but would they have thought that of me if I'd been there? It all goes through your mind all the time. It's heartbreaking sometimes, but what can you do?
What do you remember happening next?
People were going down with snow blindness. Have you ever heard of this before?
Yes.
We had no dark glasses whatsoever. The boots they give us, the Arctic boots, they almost fell off your feet. You only had to knock them, and the tops just broke away. So we went back to the old army boots, and it was fantastic. And what happened next? We was on the Aran River. We saw this woman coming across the bridge, and one of our officers said, "Send her back." And no, we felt sorry for her. She said, "Could be a spy." Anyway, we let her through. She had a job to walk coming up, but when she went back, she was walking like a 2-year-old. So she must come over and pick up a bit of information. It could have been right. Then we see another one come across, and she was coming towards a minefield. And we shouted and shouted and shouted. And she took note, we even got rifles out and fired at her feet. She still come on. Next minute was an almighty bang. She's gone up the air, got a baby on her back. See, I can't remember exact times or places, but a couple of our boys went out on patrol with an officer called Kelly. There was snow, and there was no houses, it was just snow all the way, and that's where the snow blindness come in. And when they came back, there was an almighty bang. Something was over our heads. Next thing, they're fetching this officer off. He was a lieutenant. And he had all these private parts blowing off everything. He died. Barber, he's dead now. He died with it. A fella called Wallace, he was with him. You know your lapels on your coat? Army greatcoat. They were burnt off. Never touched him. They were scorched, went away down. Never touched his face. Mind you, it would have done him a world of good, because he was ugly. He was a right cockney boy, you know. There was something else, but I just can't think of that at the moment. Oh, we took in people, we fed people, we found a little, see this kid keep darting to the corner, coming out looking through tins of empty tins trying to scrape out food, and he kept going to this corner. We looked in the corner, he had his friend there and he had both his legs blown off. What do you 8-9-year-old, he was taken away. Then I found this bag, what they call, we used to use them for shopping, not me mum. It was a bag, like a rice bag, straw bag. And I thought, I haven't seen one of them for years. Of course, I picked it up. There's a little girl in there, dead as a doornail, just been chucked out on the rocks. And what can you do? You've got nothing to dig in with. It's so hard you have to leave it there. Probably made a meal for a dog or something like that. Because they told me that. I don't know whether it's true or not, because I never see it. They told me some of the boys died on the way. The dog just got stuck into them. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, because I never see it. But they did tell me that. Several people told me that, anyway. And And it went on from there, and I was, you know, cheesed off. We were dug in a place called Piontek. This is when the Gurkhas went through. It was bloody cold. And had a letter from home, from the wife. And a bloke called Jimmy Pye had one from Newcastle. He lived in Newcastle, but his mother-in-law sent him a letter with a pound in it. Go and get yourself a cup of tea, son. The nearest nephew was in Japan, so... And my wife was complaining because she got no coal indoors. I thought, what am I doing here amongst all this ice and snow and all that? I was going to get out of it, go back home. I wrote a letter back saying, oh, you poor thing. So that was it. There's a lot I've missed out when we come back through Pyongyang. The Americans set everything alight. They blew the bridge. I think an old plane come over, and they were dropping the bombs off, and you know, it was only a small one, dropping over the side. Must have been an old chink one. And eventually we got back to our bases, and that's that. And then we had to go up onto towards the Imbium. Oh, we was up there quite some time. But I will take my hat off to the Korean porters. I don't ever, anybody ever mention them?
Briefly.
They were fantastic.
Because of their hard work?
They were hard working. They never complained. They never got paid. Probably got their belly full with food. They were fighting for their country as well as what we were doing for them. They appreciated what we'd done. And they were up and down mountains all the time. One load of ammunition. They'd run down the mountain again, get another load of ammunition. And that's how they went. And the one, he was as strong as an ox. They gave him 3 stripes. Only mucking about. They kept these blokes in line. They all respected him because he had 3 stripes up there. You know, it was only, what somebody said, yeah, I put them up and they take notes of him. And he would shout and get on, do that and do this in his language. It was a wicked old war. Hardships, not the actual fighting, it was bad, but it had been worse. You know, you get like Monte Cassino, Stalingrad. They were bad, weren't they?
What happened when the Chinese attacked on the Imjin? Can you tell me your memories of that battle?
Now then, you ain't going to believe this. We was on the hills, and we had all these people coming up, walking up and down, nobody checking. Then we sent out a patrol, came back one man short. I said, where's so-and-so? He was an Irishman, and Smithy spoke about this Irishman, Owen Smith. He's gone missing. Anybody know where he is? No, he's out of no man's land. I said, well, we've got to go and find him. So this officer and myself, we went out. So the officer was out. He went out with that patrol. And we hunted and hunted and hunted. We were just about to give up because it was all ice and snow. You know the old, on the hill you boot, you've got this metal shoe. I just spotted that glimpsing in the snow, glittering in the snow. I said, here he is, sir. We went and got him. Pissed as an handcart. What had happened, the sergeant had been saving some of our rum ration and putting it in his bottle for a cold, bitter day, and he made a very bad mistake. He gave this rum to the officer, who passed it back down, and never got no more further than the Irishman. Full bottle, straight down. I understand he was shouting and raving down, and all of a sudden he just went out. The booze knocked him out. Good job it did. Anyway, we got him back in. I ain't going to mention his name. Don't want to. Got him back in. Then I was having, I didn't even know I was having trouble with my leg. I used to walk along, I used to lift my left leg up in the air. And I started falling over with it. There was no blood getting through to my leg. I didn't even realise, it was only through a Lieutenant Norris. He said, your leg was all right, caught up on it. I said, yeah. He said, well, you're doing this with it. I didn't even realise I was doing it. Anyway, we went across the Indian River, penetrated about, some say about 18 miles, I don't know. Never found a bloody joint of it. Never found one. We done listening patrols, we done everything. Then we came back. One of the officers lost his binoculars, he left them over there somewhere. And the good Lord was on my side. We got back on a Saturday, and I think it was all Bill Norris, I'm sure it was. Corporal Ponsford, you're going on 5 days R&R leave with so-and-so, Major what they call him, Mad Hooton. We got on the 15 underway, went to BHQ, handed our guns and it in there, and we went down to Suwon, Pimpo Airfield, I think it was. Jumped on a plane. That was on the 21st of April. In the evening. When we landed, Mad Hooton said, the battalion has been attacked. That was on the 22nd. And we weren't allowed back. We had five days R&R, that was laid down by the Americans. Everybody had to have 5 days rest and relaxation. So the good Lord shone on me that day. And I understand from the boys that went back, if you didn't make it, you were taken round the corner and a bullet was put in your head. Now you probably heard this from another fellow when I'll give you his address, because he was on that long march back. And, well, if there is anybody up there, I can't thank him enough. But I would never have ever have made it back to that place, because afterwards the leg was getting worse. Just, I've fallen over.
What had you done to your leg?
Lack of blood getting through. I'll show you now, I still suffer with it now.
Why wasn't the blood... No, show me how
I think it was veins. Yeah.
Was it because of the cold or something?
It could have been the cold. Anyway, they sent me back. I had the operation, they cut me there.
On your thigh?
Yeah, in the thigh and in there. And after that, I was all right. But I still get trouble with the leg because it swells up.
And you'd got the leg problem before you went on leave?
I had it all the time. I didn't even know. It was only through Lieutenant Norris telling me my leg was dodgy. I didn't even know. I went to put my foot down one day and went there. I just hit the deck. You know when your leg goes dead and you're trying to stand up and just go. That's how it went. Anyway, I done a good job on it. Got the blood circulating again. I think they done it. Cut a vein out and put it somewhere else. I'm not sure. That was a Curie.
You were in hospital in Curie?
Yes.
Was that the Americans or the British?
Well, it was Australian, I think. There was a lot of Australian nurses in there. It was a Commonwealth, put it that way.
Did they do a good job for you?
Yes. Yes, I must admit that, because I still get a bit of trouble. You know, my leg swells up. But other than that, all right.
So, did that mean you didn't have to go back into the fighting in Korea?
No, I could have gone back in. But I was ordered, who was it? I don't know if it was Secretary Wood or what. The battalion was going to get moved out to go home. All our equipment was in Kure. And I was put in charge of packing all the gear up, you know, crates, boxes, you name it. Get it all done, ready for a couple of months, and then come and pick it up when the boat pulled in, we get on a boat and go back home.
How do you feel now about having served in the Korean War?
I feel a good job done for the people out there, because they were so primitive. They appreciated what we'd done. You know, they, as I was saying, importers, they couldn't do enough for us. I understand they were shot afterwards.
What did you think of the Chinese enemy?
Not a lot. Just a load of rebel. I felt sorry for them. You read your books. They had better clothing than what we did, to keep us warm, to keep them warm. But the only thing what let them down, they wore these baseball boots or basketball boots. And it was so cold, the frostbite, their feet were falling off. And you read some of the books, they were walking in on their stumps to give themselves up. And it's how bloody cold it was.
Did you suffer much from the cold?
Yeah. I still suffer with it now. When it's going to get cold, I've got so many coats on. There are little fires going wherever we could out of sight of the enemy, and kept as warm as possible, because we never had the clothing.
What were your rations like in Korea?
Same old British rations, you know. Bit of corned beef, bit of this, bit of that. But the Americans, they had their sea rations, we used to get scrum some of that.
What were American rations like?
Good. They had boxes, don't they? Sea rations. Tins of fruit and you name it. See, it's a long time ago, I can't remember it all. I'll tell you, we were pulling out, we was on our way back from the Yellow River, come through Pyongyang, and Pyongyang was burning. It was well alight. The airfield was well alight. The kerosene, the fuel, aviation fuel, they set that alight. And we found this dump, what the Americans dumped. It was as high as this house. All clothing, anything I could chuck in. And I found tins and tins of Spam, the big ones. You know what? I had three of them in the morning. Three tins. What I thought was a cold weather. But it wasn't. I was full up with worms, and a lot of us were. The Korean people, they was infested with worms. You name what worm it is, they had it.
So did it mean you were hungry all the time?
Well, you were eating, and you always felt hungry. And when I come home from Korea, I went to the toilet at Warminster. And you look down, I see the bloody great worms there. I thought, Christ. And they treated me at Tidworth Hospital for it.
Was it easy to get rid of them?
Well, you were drowsy all the time. I got rid of them eventually. Then I also had kidney trouble, like gallstones. That's through the food. He was always hungry, you know. I just can't remember too much about the cooking side of it. You've done a bit of cooking yourself. You appreciate a nice tin of soup if you can get all of it. See, I'm darting in between backwards and forwards, so things I could remember. What's your name? Sam Davis. The Padre. We went up and he was giving us a little prayer and I went up. I thought, Christ, look, he's got an altar up here, got a table, got all the gear. I'm in one of the books. It's me back. You could always tell from here. Or that one was bent over when I was a kid. I used to pull my body and I'm the old man. And it was nice. Although I'm not a religious man. But you've got to have faith in something, I suppose.
Did you ever get nightmares because of Korea?
No. I was never traumatised at all. I've seen so many dead, I couldn't care less. You know, that was my attitude. This Sergeant Petherick, he was one of our sergeants. He was a rough diamond in his day. I understand he got killed on a motorbike back home. But he said, look at all them Chinese there, George, that was all piled up. That's where they getting caught up in the barrage. And you get the, what they call the airbus, come down on loads of them. And he said, look at all them, George. I said, I'll tell you what, you don't have to worry about them anymore. That was my attitude. Well, you don't. They can't kill you, can they? It's the live ones that kill you. They're the ones who do the damage. Mind you, I want a brave man. Oh, Christ, we were all a bit wary. But it wasn't like you never got this occasional shell come over amongst you or anything like that.
The occasional what?
Shell or mortar bomb, because I don't think they had the equipment. But I did find out afterwards that the men done the fighting, the Chinese, and the artillery was manned by women. Now, somebody, a friend of mine, went to China. He lives up the road here. And he said the Chinese still believe they won the war. Well, it's propaganda, isn't it? You know, we're led to believe that we won it, and they're led to believe that they won it. It's politicians.
You mentioned the Turks, but did you see much of the other Allied troops amongst the United Nations?
Saw a few Belgians, plenty of Americans. Americans, well, I'll tell you what, they're a very, very generous race. They are very generous. But the only snag with them, they were too mechanised. Where we would get off the lorry and walk 12, 15 miles to the front, they had to be driven there. Headlights blazing, shells going straight into the back of them, just wiping them out before they got there.
In what way were they generous towards you?
If they can give us warm clothing, they will give you cigarettes, they will come in and mix in with you, have a good laugh and joke. And they're no either, they're a very generous race. But, and a but is, they let everybody know it. And their fighting qualities were second to none. Make no mistake about that, but they approached the war different to what we approached. Where we would go in, and the 25-pounders would open up, your big artillery out the front, and your 25-pounders, and there was an amazing gun, what a creeping barrage. We'd follow it.